This is Football. I'm Kevin Clark. Mike Renner joins to preview Combine Workout Warriors. Now, Workout Warriors or Combine Freaks, whatever you want to call them, it's been an evolution over the past, let's say, 15 years. Because it used to be don't take the Workout Warrior. Because there were a bunch of guys in the 90s who were branded that and then they busted. Well, you know what? There were a lot of guys who tested really, really, really well and they were absolute athletic marvels and they had Hall of Fame careers. And then a couple of random guys from the Midwest were the quote unquote workout warriors and they busted and that became a bad thing. Athleticism is never a bad thing. I have done a couple of 180s, I guess, to channel Macho Man, a 180, a 360, 180 again, 90 degrees, whatever. On what matters at the combine. Most of the board is based off of game film, Senior Bowl, meeting, all-star games, then meetings. And that happens this week too. Workouts, pro days matter, of course, as well. But I think for most positions, you're looking for athleticism to eliminate positions, eliminate players, instead of confirm that this guy is a first or second round pick. Here's what I mean by that. Like, if a guy is an edge rusher and he's unathletic, you cannot seriously take him. You can't do it. It is malpractice. Like, really unathletic. And that was the one thing that I think that teams have started to realize over the past, let's say, decade. Like, a great example, like Jarvis Jones, who was not an athlete, coming out of Georgia. I mean, listen, relatively speaking, great athlete. You know, he could kick my ass in literally everything, including the things I'm allegedly good at. Jarvis Jones kicked my ass. But compared to a bunch of other linebackers in the NFL, he was not as athletic. The Steelers took him, I think, 17th overall. And then the next 5 years, all they did was take really athletic guys because they were like, never again. And I think that's, you kind of learn your lesson in what happens when you take unathletic guys. But I think that there's a couple positions where you just need to cross the threshold. I don't think, so I've had a complete 180 on this. And I talked to Renner about this a little bit later. I no longer care about athleticism from offensive line. I do not care because I was all into Andre Dillard. And guess what? He was terrible. Jason Spriggs, he was terrible. All of these guys, because we were all into their metrics. Guess what? They couldn't move guys, which is the number one requisite of being an offensive lineman. Wide receivers, I love these high jumping guys. Well, guess what? Like Miles Boykin, what's he doing right now? Exactly. Guys like that. So for me, athleticism at most positions is just confirming what you see on the tape. If a guy, Calvin Johnson, amazing tester. Well, guess what? We saw some things on tape from Georgia Tech that showed me that Calvin Johnson's an amazing football player. So what it comes down to for me is front seven and then betting on athleticism in the defensive backfield. I'll give you a great example. I loved Tyreek Woolen coming out. That was a hit. I also love this guy, Zion McCollum, who's just okay for Tampa Bay. Both of them have the measurables. Both of them have the athleticism. And you kind of have to, if you're after the first round, you're kind of throwing darts at the board anyway. But Leo Chenal's a guy I loved. Fred Warner's a guy I loved just because of their athleticism. But where it really matters is defensive line. You cannot be an unathletic defensive lineman. And again, like, one of the biggest freaks of the last decade was Myles Garrett. J.J. Watt was a freak. Well, guess what? We saw some things on film that suggested they might be really athletic. So I think it's great context working out, but we have a bunch of different ways to contextualize that now with analytics and all that stuff to figure that out. So I still think it's really useful. It's kind of a convention for everybody in football as well, which I think is important. But my journey is going from not caring about the combine to caring about it too much to caring about it, what I would say, is just right. So that's what I watch. Athleticism thresholds being crossed. As long as you're above it and you have great tape, you can play in the NFL. If you're below it, you have to figure out why. I don't take non-athletes in my hypothetical team unless they're, you know, Orlando Brown, you know, offensive lineman type guys. That's a different deal. I'd rather have Orlando Brown than Andre Dillard. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Renner.
ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, Mike Renner, he is in my hometown of Orlando, Florida. He's playing golf this week, but he's also previewing the combine. What's going on, brother?
Not too much, dude. Just been got a lot of time in my hands, so thanks for asking me to come on, dude.
Yeah, well, so this is draft season. The combine starts, what, 5 days from now? Something like that? I know yeah, some of the GMs like Monday, coaches start talking.
Yeah, they don't like work out till like Thursday or something. So
it's a slow rollout. We've both been doing this for kind of a while. Has the combine gotten more useful because of analytics, less useful because some guys don't do drills? Like, how would you contextualize what the combine is to you in the modern sport?
I think it's gotten less useful. One, because we get more information elsewhere in terms of like GPS numbers, other testing, that sort of thing. And two, because they're so controlled now, I feel like, these players, yep, by their agents. It used to be you showed up to Indy and you did everything, no matter who you were. If you were like a reasonable prospect, you did it all. Now it's like, I know my three cone is below the 50th percentile, so I don't do that drill and I save it for my pro day. And then if it's still not good, I come up with the hamstring in my pro day and then you just never see it. So you truly like people, it's such a manicured process now for a lot of these prospects. That's just, you know, that's why I do think when a guy really does test poorly, it kind of matters, because it's like, well, they're getting bad advice from people, or they're really not the athlete we thought they were. So, but I do think that overall, you're just not getting as good information anymore.
So I remember I knew we were cooked when it was a big deal when Blake Bortles threw in 2014. And I was like, oh, Lord, if it's a big deal that Blake Bortles is throwing, like the combine is not going to be a serious kind of event for long. Hey, Bortles is a gamer. He was a gamer. The Jaguars loved it. The Jaguars loved it. All right. So let's get through. Like, my feeling, I did my intro on this. My feeling is we have more ways to contextualize it, but again, the GPS thing cannot be understated. Also, teams get that information, whether that's via legitimate or not. Like, I remember the Senior Bowl had some of that GPS data, but I know one GM told me something about a safety a couple of years ago who came out, and he was like, hey, you know, he tested well, but I think he plays slow. They called the school. They said, can you send me some of his just baseline GPS stuff? And he did play slow. And so it's like, okay, well, would you rather have the 40 time, or would you rather have the school? I keep almost saying the school, and I don't want to do it. Would you rather have the school just say, hey, like, he actually, this is it, and this is his speed, and the five other DBs you can comp him against were all faster, you know, on a dead sprint. So that to me is why it's still useful, and we can still figure out requisite athleticism. We also understand the positional value. Like, defensive linemen, to me, have to test well in some way. You cannot be an unathletic defensive lineman. Even if you're massive, you have to show me something. Wide receivers, obviously, there's going to be some speed thresholds. But on the other side, like, I am completely against offensive lineman athleticism. Sorry, I saw Andre Dillard play. I was all in on him because it was three cone or something. And I forget what it was. Short shuttle. Oh my God, Andre Dillard. Look at this. Look at the next Lane Johnson. Yeah, a lot of people thought so. Meanwhile, turns out he can't play. You know the other guy? Jason Spriggs, if you remember him.
Oh, he was one of the guys.
Combine King. I'm like, you sell it all. And listen, there are guys that I have hit on because just off their athletic testing, just off it. Fred Warner, Alvin Kamara, Christian Watson, Leo Chenal, like guys like that. We're just like, okay, this looks good. Let's start hyping these guys up. But then there's enough guys, especially on the offensive side of the ball, where I'm just like, oh, this doesn't matter.
Yeah, you have to. To me, I'd always, when you hear combine risers, fallers, it's such a personal thing, because it's like, if I think a guy's a bad athlete on tape and then he tests better, it's like, okay, well, like, is he that, what I saw on tape, or is he what he is at the combine? So it's, if you think the guy that I saw and saw was a bad athlete on tape and you thought he was a good athlete on tape though and he tested well, it's like, well, then he wouldn't be a riser for you. You already thought he was a good athlete. So it is such, to me, when you hear these like risers and fallers, it's so what you're preconceived notion of this guy's athleticism was based off of what you've seen from already. Just because a guy goes there and if you haven't watched him a bit and tests well, it doesn't necessarily mean he's a riser, in my opinion.
Yeah, and what's funny is like Bruce Feldman, and I brought this up because what we're doing is combine freak preview, basically. Bruce Feldman does his freaks list that's sourced to weight rooms and you know, assistant coaches telling them, hey, this guy, you know, did his crazy testing, and he's always right. There's never a guy who, like, you can get that information in so many different ways. And how about risers and followers? Like, we know who the freaks are, right? And like, and looking at Bruce Feldman's list, it's like Marvin Harrison Jr. is second. Like, no one, I promise you, needs to see Marvin Harrison's testing next week. Chris Jenkins is a good example. Michigan defensive tackle was on the list last year. Chop Robinson, a couple other guys like that. But it's like, I think that it has, in a lot of ways, as I said, it's gotten contextualized more. But on the other hand, it is a relic of 30 years ago. Having said that, it's still a good place to get info. It's still a good place to confirm your priors. We're going to do your top five combine freak watch guys. You have the floor, Mike Renner. Who's your first?
I'm going to go with Malik Nabers first.
Oh, the
LSU wide receiver. Because there's a thing about him, and it's not going to show up in the combine testing, that I really like. I haven't quite seen a guy that has what he has athletically at his size. The guys that move the way he does are, you know, like Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill. They're 5'8", 180. They're way smaller than he is. But his ability to stop and start at that size, and that's the thing that I think it's overrated when – you hear combine 40s, or not overrated, but not talked about, is that when a guy's super fast, yes, that helps that wide receiver, but to make that effective and make it work on a football field, you have to be able to stop, because what being super fast does is gives you a cushion. And how to take advantage of that cushion is to be able to effectively run hitch routes, comebacks, that sort of thing. And the guys that really can't do that, well, then you just stay way off. The guys know they're going to run a hitch route because it takes them 3 to 4 yards to stop, and then they just jump those routes. So that's why a lot of these 4-3, 4-2 wide receivers get overdrafted and then don't do a lick in the NFL, is because the NFL corners are pretty darn fast too. So, but with Malik Nabers, he's not only 4-3 type of fast, but he's 4-3 type of fast to a complete stop in like 1 to 2 yards. And it's wild to watch that guy just move on a football field. So I don't know what his testing numbers exactly will be, but I expect just across the board, he's going to hit, you know, 90+ percentile in pretty much every drill imaginable.
Wide receiver 3 for most people at this point?
I have him wide receiver 2. Because I think Rome and Marvin are one type of wide receiver. Rome Odunze, the Washington wide receiver, obviously. They are your prototypes, kind of. But Nabers is what's winning today. You know, I think everyone's looking for the Jalen Waddle, the Tyreek Hill in their offense. Everyone's looking for just dynamism, however they can find it. Because how I like to say it is, Rome Odunze can give you 40-yard touchdowns. Malik Nabers can give you 70-yard touchdowns.
Oh.
And everyone's looking for the 70-yarders nowadays.
Cut the middleman out. We don't need to get these 30 yards. We don't need to get this extra 30 yards. We need to get the 70-yard touchdown. That's fascinating. I saw you said on Twitter a couple weeks ago that it could be a clean sweep of offense in the top 10 this year. Is that just like a coincidence? Is that because Jordan Reed did something similar on the show a couple weeks ago? Is that just a bunch of good receivers, a bunch of good tackles, a bunch of good quarterbacks, or is that maybe even more of a philosophical shift in the league? And also, I'd say that there's no dominant pass rusher this year, which would be a lock for the top five if one existed.
I think it's more a philosophical shift of high school offenses, honestly. And I do think it's a trend because 2021 is the record. 2021 had 7 first round straight offensive players. And no one, I think, before that even had 5. So like it, you go back through old drafts and there's like, you'd be hard pressed to get like 3 straight offensive players start the draft. But I think it's because you start playing high school football now and you're one of the best athletes at your school. They throw the ball around the yard. And so what do you want to do? Do you want to play cornerback and try to stop these guys? Or do you want to be the one scoring those touchdowns? Do you want to be the one throwing those touchdowns? I think everyone wants to be the stars. You know, no one cares about the guy who's locking down one side of the field that no one's targeting at corner. So all your best athletes are getting attracted to wide receiver and quarterback. And that's why, you know, 3 wide receivers are probably going to go like top 8 picks in this draft. And 3 quarterbacks are probably going to go top 8 picks in this draft. So I think it's more that than it is a NFL coveting offense. If there were like high end defensive, you know, players in this draft, the NFL would probably be gravitating towards them just as much.
It's interesting because I remember talking to a coach. It was actually Andrew Luck's coach, about a high school coach, about a decade ago. And he was saying, think about 7-on-7s, which if you're a defensive end, can't really play 7-on-7s, which is all they do for 8 months out of the year in Texas and Florida and California and Louisiana. And he said, who's getting better? Cornerbacks who want to play tight man coverage and wide receivers who can throw the ball around and quarterbacks who are throwing into these tight windows. What positions, I mean, like you think about it, like wide receivers have exploded. And I think part of it is because they're playing 8 months out of the year. Quarterbacks are getting better because they're playing 8 months out of the year. It's really hard for a linebacker to do anything in those situations. Really hard for an instinctual safety to get better for those months out of the year. So it's really interesting that you brought that up. I hadn't thought about that in a while, but I really do love that theory. More with Mike after this. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? 2 words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. All right, combine freak number 2.
I'm going to go with Chop Robinson, the Penn State defensive end.
That's it. That's number 9 on Bruce Feldman's freak list, and he's now number 2. He's graduated.
So he's, to me, there's – right now he's not a great football player. Like, you watch him in some games and – you know, he doesn't have too many pass rushing moves. He's not particularly physical, even though, you know, 6'3", 254 is not bad size by any means for a defensive end. But there is, I feel like there's a path to success of if you're just that caliber of freaky as a pass rusher. Yep. And now in college, you can win as an undersized rusher by just making offensive tackles miss. Like that's there's an athletic difference. And a lot of the undersized guys from college, that's why they don't translate to the NFL, is because they get more athletic. You can't just run around them to simplify it. Yeah. But when you get to a certain level, though, and I think we see it with Micah Parsons and what he's doing, a lot of times it's just he's kind of running around guys. And now he like swats hands away at times. Guys still get their hands on him, but he's basically just out-athleting tackles for the vast majority of his high-end pass rushing wins, and or at least early on in his career was. And so with Trop Robinson, I think he's kind of close to that tier of just, man, he might be able to, against certain tackles, just go to town on them because he's not only one explosive up the football field. And on Feldman's Freaks List, it said he ran a 4.47, and I fully believe it, watching him play. But he also can duck inside his lateral agility to sell that upfield rush and then come back and counter inside is really unlike any other prospect in this draft. It's really not even close. He is the best athlete on the edge in this class. So it doesn't take a lot when you're that freaky. So I'm very excited to see just like the caliber that he is, because I put him in a pretty lofty tier. Now he does need to improve in a lot of different ways, but again, I do think there's a path to where, you know, 1 to 2 pass rushing moves that he's consistent with, and the guy could be a nightmare.
I completely agree. Who's the last ultra athletic edge who just straight up busted?
That's a good question. Who just never?
I just quite feels made it. Like I mean, there's like, always that you can coach them into having success.
I mean, like Deion Jordan was billed as that. Oh, but yeah. Then I remember his combine was not that, right? Like he ended up
that
not
was just a weird
that.
Year. Everybody got overrated because there were no good players.
Quiddy Pay, I don't think like was a bust, but he hasn't quite lived up to maybe his freak status in the NFL. I go to the Penn State, Dafe Owe was almost a very similar guy where it's like, oh, he's just an athlete coming out. This past year, he was actually like a productive edge in year three. So, yeah, I do think that's one position where you just bet on the athletes. They more often than not come around.
And if you can't get them somewhere, you have bad coaching, or they just literally just don't love football. And when I say they don't love football, there's guys who actually don't like football who become amazing football players. I mean, like, they just don't want to practice. Like, that would be the only way. Like, who was that guy? Remember the Stanford tight end, Castile? Remember this guy? He was on Hard Knocks. He was an ultra-athletic tight end. I might be pronouncing his name wrong. Devin Castile, I think, something like that. I loved him because of his testing. From Stanford, the whole deal. Good juice, yeah, sorry. He busted, obviously, and then he retired, and then in his retirement he's like, I really want to get into crystals, like selling crystals.
Oh, the crystals,
a crystal guy. And so I was like, okay, well, I wish I had known he was a crystal guy, because one of my things is like, you know, okay, why is he busting? Even guys who hate football do it. Oh, he wants to be a crystal guy, so maybe that's the red flag. Maybe that's we always double these red flags. That's the red flag. You want to retire or to be a crystal guy?
You give those questionnaires in the interviews, and they always have, "Are you a crystal guy?" is one of the questions.
Yeah, number one question in combine. that should replace the S2 test.
Yeah, it's like, what do you think of this? It's just a crystal. And it's like, what are your thoughts on this? And if it's like anything other than, what the hell is that?
I don't know what this is. And if it's really a problem if he says I want to retire early to focus on this full time. All right, number three,
I'm going to go J.C. Latham as my third one here. The Alabama offensive tackle who, for different reasons, we're talking about, you know, the first two guys, freak athletes. This guy is the strongest offensive lineman in the draft and truly one of the strongest offensive linemen I've seen from a college prospect. And not only just strong, he is the thickestly built offensive lineman I've seen in a long time. He's 6'6", 359. And it's just because everything about him is massive. I look at the rear view of the All-22 of the Alabama offensive line, and his arms like stick out on tape as just a completely different size from everyone else. And they're not like fat. It's not like he's holding. They are just completely muscle wrapped on top of massive bones. He has hands that are, I'm excited to see what like actual size they are. But on tape, like you see, usually you don't see a guy's like hands in shoulder pads. You see them on tape. And then he has reps as a run blocker that are just straight out of the blind side, where he's just running with guys down the football field that he engages at the line of scrimmage and just overpowers. And then like when he gets a pancake block, he goes, he loses his mind. The guy's just screaming and you can like see him just flexing. So for all those reasons, I'm a fan. I think Cole Kublik tweeted out that he benched 505 pounds twice for two reps and he squatted 900 pounds with resistance bands on. So I think the bench record could be in play with JC Latham if he really wants to go for it.
Who has the bench record now?
I think it's still Stephen P. I think it's still 49. There's been like multiple guys since then. When did he come out? He came out like 11 or 12, the Oregon State. They even got drafted by the Bears.
Yeah.
There's been like a bunch of guys since then who have been like, oh, I did it, you know, in practicing in the lead up and then no one's ever really touched it. But
it's like that. It's like that. Do you remember Urban Meyer's 40 time board? This is like the best thing I've ever seen in my life. So the Times did a story about the Gators, New York Times did a story about the Gators and their like strength program during like the Percy Harvin era. And they took a photo of the like the record board, okay? And it was all at the current Gators. It was like, you know that crew. It was Chris Rainey, Brandon James, Harvin, obviously, like Ingram, a bunch of these guys, right? And like eight of them would have set the combine record for like speed. They all ran like 4.16. It's like, okay, guys. All right, guys, let's relax here. Yeah. It's like the entire board was like guys who would be like the third overall pick. And it's like guys who weren't even seeing the field. And it's like, I'm not really sure what's happening here in this gym, but I think we might be inflating the numbers here a little bit. Do not trust those sort of times. That's the one thing when we're talking about GPS data, trust the GPS data, not Urban Meyer's Iron Gator board.
Percy Harvin, I actually, being down here in Orlando, I worked out next to him at the LA Fitness here, him and Devin Hester. But this was like 3 years after they had both retired. It was almost like kind of sad.
Oh my God.
It seemed like they were training to still like get in the league. And I was like, oh man, they were past their prime.
How fast were they?
They were just lifting at the LA Fitness, but like doing real explosive lifts, like trying to.
No, speed work.
Neither of them looked like they were in great shape, unfortunately.
All right, do your next one while I look for the Urban Meyer's Iron Gator board.
My next one, I'm going to go with Joe Milton, the Tennessee quarterback, as my next one for two different reasons here. One, he may have the strongest arm of any quarterback, playing quarterback anywhere right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the throws, he's made more throws 60-plus yards downfield than any quarterback I've ever seen. He had a completion against Missouri and a completion against Vanderbilt last year where he's at his own 30, and he puts it inside the 10-yard line from the opposite hash, completes it. He had a throw this year against Kentucky where he's at his own 20 and he puts it to the opposite 13. I did a little back of the napkin Pythagorean theorem, 73 mm-hmm. yards that throw was. Overthrew a guy who was 65 yards down the football field. I watch him throw and it's just like, it doesn't make sense. He doesn't even like stride into this. It's just, he just flicks it. And he even said in an interview, he said, if I think about it and try to throw hard, it like comes out wrong. I just have to not think when I throw deep. And that's when it goes fast. So he may break the combine GPS mile per hour record. I think 62 miles per hour is the record. Josh Allen, Dorian Thompson Robinson tied, which I don't know how Dorian Thompson Robinson got there, but he could break that. He has an absolute hose. But then the second part is he ran 21.3 miles per hour on the GPS. Mm-hmm. This guy's 6'5", 235 and can fly. I think that we've seen a lot of him at quarterback and know that while his arm's awesome, he is very inaccurate as well. I think he could be a nasty tight end in the NFL because I watch him lower his shoulder. He runs hard. He runs fast. He can break mm-hmm. tackles. Mm-hmm. I do think that, obviously he's going to get a shot at quarterback, but a lot of guys, Logan Thomas being most recent, have started out a QB. It didn't work out. Freak athlete. Give him a shot, dude. I think he could do it.
Is there a path? You mentioned, obviously, he's got a place in the league, we think. Let's stick a quarterback. Mm-hmm. 2 years away? Does he need to just like kind of be in a program. I mean, like, it'd be really hard because you couldn't really be a backup. Teams don't really do third quarterbacks anymore for any period of time. Like, it's a tough road to hoe, and you don't get a lot of reps anymore. Like, it's a pretty tough time to be a developmental quarterback unless someone really believes in you.
It is, and it's also like, he's been called this developmental quarterback. He's 6 years in college football, right?
Right.
Between Michigan and Tennessee. And he's also coming from an offense at Tennessee that's not doing him any favors from what he's going to be prepared for in terms of handling an NFL playbook. So he's really behind the eight ball for a lot of reasons in that regard. So, you know, when you have that high end of tools, someone will give you a chance, but it wouldn't surprise me if, like, we're talking, what was it? Felipe Franks was a tight end by the end of his rookie year. I think we could see a similar transition from him.
Felipe Franks, he and Kadarius Toney played a game against Miami that I think about quite a bit. Toney had us in hell, and I thought Toney was amazing, and turns out Manny Diaz just didn't know what he was doing. Classic. Then Franks threw some interceptions there. That was like, have you ever seen the Steve Spurrier meme where he's like looking like, oh my God, that's from that game was some of the throws Felipe Franks made. Are there any other intriguing, like, we saw Hendon Hooker drafted last year, kind of a stash and develop guy. Obviously, he was injured from Detroit. Are there any intriguing quarterbacks aside from Milton to you where you're just like, huh, this guy could be an interesting kind of day three type of pick?
Oh, I think Spencer Rattler, South Carolina quarterback, fits that bill. He's, you know, high-end tools. If you were going back to, what was that? I guess it would have been 2021.
Yep.
Way too early mocks. He was in the first round because after his first year starting at Oklahoma, redshirt freshman year, he'd put up numbers. And Oklahoma was just kind of the pipeline then. It was Baker to Kyler to Jalen Hurts. And then you just thought he was the next one because he was highly recruited, had all the tools. But, you know, had to humble himself, got benched for Caleb Williams. No real shame in that. But then, you know, never really turned things around completely in South Carolina, but definitely turned things around from like a maturity aspect at this point in time. And so with that amount of tools, and if he's going to put in the work, I think there's reason to believe that you would take that guy in day three and bet on what his upside could be.
The league likes, I have not asked anybody about Rattler in the last month because I've been busy. I've not checked in. I've not been like, hold everything. At halftime of the Super Bowl, I'm just going to start calling scouting directors. What's up with Rattler? No, but you BS with GMs and scouts and decision makers during the season. They liked his potential more than I did. I guess that's the way I would put it. They liked him more than I did. And I think it was a couple people have said basically at Oklahoma, he obviously lost his job to Caleb Williams. No shame in that, looking back on it. But then I think, I forget who said it, but it was someone close to him publicly said this on a podcast, that he liked the being a quarterback more than playing quarterback early in his career. And I think that that's kind of balanced out a little bit. All right, drum roll, please. Last one.
We are going with Quinyon Mitchell, the Toledo cornerback. For
people are falling in love with this dude.
And it's because I've talked about, you know, high-end athletes. I talked about high-end strength guys. He's both, man. This guy, why people are falling in love with him is because not only is because he's, you know, a 4.3 high-end GPS numbers dude, high-end speed, but he might be, you know, pound for pound, one of the strongest cornerbacks I've ever seen. You watch it, you know, and on tape in the MAC, it's like, okay, he's beating up MAC wide receivers. What's all that about? What's that going to do to NFL wide receivers? But then he goes to the Senior Bowl, and like, he just had his way with guys who are going to be in the league next year that he's going to be going up against. And the thing that just like amazes me watching his tape is that when wide receivers contact him, they fall down. They are the ones that bounce off of him. He doesn't give an inch when guys try to run through him. Mm-hmm. He's just so solidly built and has such good balance that in that kind of contact battle, it almost reminds me of like the defensive version of Jamar Chase. And that Jamar Chase, like, what makes him so special is that he's just stronger and he's not like bigger. You know, Anquan Boldin is obviously bigger and stronger, and you could see that. Jamar Chase is just like, he just is stronger somehow. He's only 200 pounds, just is stronger. That's how I feel watching Quinyon Mitchell. He might be the same size as you, but he's so much stronger than you are playing defense.
I love that. That's a great comp. Offensive Jamar or defensive Jamar Chase.
Yeah.
where does he go? Because Daniel Jeremiah was talking about him up the other day and said he was telling Bucky and those guys, like, look out for this kid. He's rising. And, like, listen, we were talking earlier. Oftentimes the concept of risers, especially this late in the process, it's a misnomer. But, like, you can rise if you have Senior Bowl performances like that, combine and all that stuff. The funny thing to me is always, like, 2 days out from the draft is the report. Like, this guy's flying up draft boards. No, he's not. Do you remember the Ryan Nassib week? Remember that? Where Ryan Nassib was flying up draft boards on Tuesday. Gosh. And then he was like a fifth round pick and he's out of the league now.
Yeah.
He's doing something now. Is he coach or something like that? Anyway,
not
a Ryan Nassib pod. But where does he end up in 3 months?
I think he ends up going top 20. And the two teams I keep going back to with him that make a lot of sense. One, the Colts, corner need. Ballard loves athletes. You know, he pretty much defensively only drafts guys with high-end traits. And then the Jags. The Jags, like, corner need. Trent Baalke loves physical freaks as well. So those two teams, if he falls past them at this point, obviously assuming that combine goes as we all expect, I think that'd be surprising if he fell past those two.
That is it's as intriguing a prospect as there is in this draft. We'll get you out of here on some rapid fire. Who's your draft crush? Like, who's the guy where you're just totally out on an island right now?
The guy, I don't know if he's the guy I keep going back to. I'm not saying I'm super high on him, but Sione Vaki, the Utah safety, is hilarious to watch. And for a few different reasons. One is because he's not only a safety, but he's also a running back. He played moonlighted at running back despite being a full-time safety, and he had like 150 yards against Cal on like 8 carries or something. He had like 150 receiving yards against USC. So he's insane as a running back. If he wanted to switch to running back, he could do that. His high school coach actually DM'd me after I tweeted about him and said his best position is slot wide receiver.
Oh my God.
So he's not only a safety and a running back, but apparently his best position is slot wide receiver. And he took some reps at slot wide receiver in at the Senior Bowl, and he can catch and, like, he can run routes. And then he also is extremely fast. Like, his over 22 miles per hour on the GPS, he's like, the guy can fly in a straight line. So I don't know what he does, because he only played 2 years of college football. He took more admission than only played 2 years. So he's also weird in that regard, and that he just barely has played. There's not a lot of guys I can ever remember who only were in college 2 years. So that's the guy I keep going back to, just being like, I am excited to see what his career is. Not to say that I would draft him top 50 or anything, but the guy's just an athlete and a football player.
Love that. All right, Mike Renner, enjoy Orlando. Enjoy all of the warmth that comes along with my hometown. And we'll see you soon, buddy.
For sure, Kim. Thanks for having me on, buddy.